I'm Mark Bayshore. Glad you're with us here on Friday. Michigan government leaders continue to weigh in on the peculiar twists and turns in the Corser Gamrat scandal. Our next guest has called for Attorney General Bill Schuette to lead an investigation into whether blackmail or other crimes were committed. Representative Tim Grimmel is the leader of Michigan's House Democrats. Welcome back to Current State, Tim.
Good morning, Mark. It's great to be on the show.
And Representative Grimmel and I are joined by MLive reporter Jonathan Osting, whose reporting this week explored who may have been behind a series of threatening text messages sent to people involved in the scandal or its cover-up. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Grimmel, much has been happening the past few days on this front. As the Democratic leader in the House, bring us up to speed on your thoughts and perhaps any actions you may have taken in the past day or two on this.
Well, this entire situation obviously is very unfortunate. It's unfortunate for the dignity of the House of Representatives. It's unfortunate for the taxpayers in the state insofar as there are allegations of misuse of public resources. And it's certainly unfortunate for the children of the representatives most directly involved. But there are some very serious allegations involved here, allegations that are of a criminal nature. And there needs to be a law enforcement agency investigation of what occurred. That's why I've called on Attorney General Schuette to launch an investigation. I understand that at the request of Representative Corser, the Michigan State Police are investigating. We need to make sure that law enforcement agencies with subpoena power, with the ability to compel people to tell the truth under oath and under the penalty of perjury, and the ability to compel the disclosure of documents and information, get involved. There's been a House Business Office investigation, which unfortunately the Republican Speaker has not, or at least so far, has not released to the public. But the House Business Office has no subpoena power, has no ability to require people to tell the truth, has no ability to require people to disclose documents, and does not have the law enforcement expertise that, say, the Attorney General's office has.
Jonathan, you advanced this story on Wednesday of this week in an important and interesting way. Your work led to the revelation that a, quote, Todd Corser, unquote, was the person who purchased the cell phone used to send anonymous threatening text messages to various people involved in the scandal. I say quote because apparently it's unclear whether it was actually a Representative Corser or somebody else claiming to be him. It's not difficult to fake that, I take it. Do we know any more today about who purchased that phone and who sent those messages?
No, we know that the phone, at least in a database that's accessible by private investigators, is linked to somebody using the name Todd Corser. Now, it sort of depends on the store you might purchase one of these so-called burner phones at. Policies vary in terms of what information you have to give, whether you even have to give a name at all, or whether you have to give any photo ID. So it's very possible that this information could have been manipulated in some way, to set up the lawmaker, which is certainly what he's contended all along. And in fact, a separate investigation done by a firm hired by Cindy Gamrat, Representative Cindy Gamrat, who's also involved in this, says they've come up with a different name. They haven't publicly released that name, but it's not Todd Corser. So it's a tangled web, certainly, and it remains that way.
We'll continue along that line, but just for context here, Jonathan, remind our listeners, remind our listeners what was in these text messages and why this is important.
Sure. So the text messages were sent in late May, right around the time that Todd Corser sent out, and he acknowledges this, sent out an email that he accused himself of various things, such as sleeping with a male prostitute, doing drugs, showing up on the House floor high. It was a weird email, and it was intended to distract or discredit any real revelations of his affair. Now, the text messages come in here because he says he sent that email while he was receiving threatening text messages from someone who was, saying they would expose the affair if he did not resign. And this texter gave, some personal information about where Courser and Gamrat had traveled and things of this nature, suggesting that this person may have been, following them in some capacity or had access to personal information anyways. So Courser's claim is that he was under real pressure here, led him to send out the email. Now, it's a separate issue from whether they had an affair and whether they tried to cover it up. That seems to be pretty clearly established mm-hmm. here.
Tim Grimmel, there are other twists to this story we'll return to, but where does all this skullduggery leave you in the House caucus?
Well, it raises more questions than it answers, frankly. As has been discussed, it's very difficult to know whether somebody who self-declares their name without showing a photo ID in the process of buying a disposable cell phone is self-declaring the real identity of themselves. In fact, there's good reason to think that if somebody were going to the effort of obtaining a disposable cell phone and of setting up some sort of untraceable P.O. box, that they would not use their real name when purchasing the disposable cell phone. And so there have been a couple of different reports about supposed names associated with the cell phone, but I think it's very unlikely that the disclosed names are the real names of those behind this.
Well, you're referring, this is out there, so we'll acknowledge it. Late Wednesday, this extraordinary report surfaced that the Detroit News reporter who broke this story some weeks ago, Chad Livengood, was identified as the texter. We'll point out also that MERS News, at the very least, has reported that the president of the Michigan Council of Professional Investigators told them that, quote, it's clear neither name connected to the cell phone in question can be considered accurate and that this information is not correct. That eliminates both Todd Courser and Chad Livengood from consideration, at least in terms of this organization is concerned. Jonathan, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I've talked to that woman as well, who's the head of the PI Association here in Michigan. And yeah, she said just what we've been saying here, that data may be easy to manipulate. What's interesting specifically is that the name associated with the phone may have somehow changed in the same record system over the course of a week. So I've been talking to her trying to explore how that might happen. Maybe a third party could, for instance, buy more minutes for the phone under a third name. In any case, I think this issue is something that really the Michigan State Police, who are investigating Courser's claims, are in a much better position to actually go after. For instance, they could go all the way back to where the phone was purchased, look at video, subpoena video camera footage from the store, and maybe actually literally see if it is available who purchased the phone. So it's an interesting story and a lot of speculation. But the heart of the situation here remains what Representative Grimmel mentioned earlier, whether taxpayer resources were misused, whether these representatives engaged in misconduct while in office. And I'm curious for Representative Grimmel here, the talk here is that this could eventually lead to an expulsion hearing, which is a very rare situation. If these questions, the MSP investigation, if AG Schutte doesn't get involved, are Democrats going to be ready to move forward and support, discipline while these questions are still out there?
Based on the available information now, I don't think I'm aware of clear evidence of public misuse of public funds. Now, having said that, there seems to be some indication of that. But with the House Speaker so far refusing to reveal this House Business Office report either to me or to other Democrats or to members of the legislature or to the media, there really is little tangible evidence available right now. There may be a committee appointed soon that will start a formal investigation into this. It's unclear whether they will actually have subpoena power or not. But unless an entity with subpoena power, with the real ability to dig into this, unearths evidence, I think at this point there's little in the way of tangible evidence. We'll see. Certainly the allegations involved here are very serious, especially the allegation of misuse of public funds. There are a lot of serious counter-allegations, allegations about the blackmail that have been touched on, allegations that the Speaker's office was eavesdropping or bugging the office of Representative Corser. And that's one of the reasons why it's so concerning and alarming that the Speaker's office is refusing to reveal the details of this report. They're saying, well, we'll decide what's relevant. We'll make that determination, and they're saying that they'll release portions of that report that they deem fit or appropriate. That's concerning because with allegations involved here that could lead to the Speaker's office, I don't know why we would want to rely on the Speaker's office to determine what's relevant. It obviously has a self-interest in disclosing things that are favorable to it and not disclosing things that might be unfavorable to it.
Well, let's follow up on that exactly here, because we've brought up three separate avenues of investigation into this thing. We've brought up the Bolin report, which is what you're just referring to, the investigation by the business director for the House, who was directed by Speaker Cotter. You don't seem to be too confident that we're going to necessarily learn too much from that. That's what I'm hearing. How much could we learn from the Bolin report?
Well, it's very hard to know because nobody knows what's in the Bolin report, as you call it. I'll refer to it as the House Business Office report because I don't want to make this about any one individual.
Good idea.
Certainly, the director of the House Business Office is a good person. He has a lot of integrity. But he also answers to the Republican Speaker of the House, and his employment is contingent on the Republican Speaker of the House allowing him to be employed there. So I think it would be a mistake to rely on the House Business Office to investigate any allegations against the Republican Speaker. And the Republican Speaker's unwillingness to disclose this report immediately in full is very concerning. His office has said that they want to, quote, sanitize, end quote, the report before releasing it to the public. That's their word, not mine. And again, people have a right to know whether or not public dollars have been misused.
Why would they use that word?
Well, you'd have to ask them. But obviously, they're looking to not disclose the entire report, and they're looking to select what information from it to disclose and what information not to disclose. And that's the alarming thing here. And again, people have a right to know whether or not public dollars were misused, and they have a right to know who's responsible and how they're going to be held accountable.
We're also talking about two other avenues here, though, the Michigan State Police investigation. Do you expect to learn much from that?
Well, I would hope so. Again, there are very serious allegations here, allegations of a criminal nature, and law enforcement agencies have a responsibility and an obligation to get to the bottom of what occurred, who's responsible, and then hold those people accountable. And that's why it's so disappointing that Attorney General Bill Schuette has done literally nothing to follow up on my request that he launch an investigation. He's been dragging his feet, and he's been unwilling to really do the work that an attorney general should do in terms of getting to the bottom of whether or not public resources have been misused.
It's hard to believe, but there are other issues here that are still in play. While you're here, I'd like to touch on some of those. The so-called quadrant. You, Senator Meekhoff, Senator Ananick, and Speaker Cotter met with Governor Snyder yesterday about road funding. What can you share with us?
Sure. Well, and I'm glad we're talking about this because as salacious as this Corser Gamrat issue is and as much media attention has been spent on that, far more important to the future of our state and the long-term stability of our state's finances and infrastructure are these road discussions. We have had a series of very productive, constructive meetings between the governor and the four of us legislative leaders. But I think people are fed up with all these meetings and they want action. And I agree that we need to, not only do we need to act on this now, we should have acted on this several years ago. It is long past time that we fix the state's roads, and for the Republican Speaker to bring us into session for 2 days last week and then adjourn and go home for several weeks is really disappointing, enormously frustrating. people in this state all agree that the most urgent priority needs to be to fix the state's roads, and we need to get it done.
Sure. So, Representative Geimel, I wasn't there when leaders emerged from the quadrant meeting yesterday, but I'm told, you know, like other meetings, there was general talk about progress being made. We hear that every time you guys meet, pretty much. What sort of progress are we talking about here? Is there any clear consensus on, you know, sticking with or moving away from the 600 new revenue versus old revenue plan that House GOP leadership has floated?
I don't think it's any secret that most of us in that room, and certainly the governor and I, have been very outspoken about our concerns regarding the House Republicans' proposal to use $600 million in general fund dollars every year, indefinitely into the future, to supposedly fix the roads when they have refused to identify where those cuts are going to come from. That leads to very serious questions about whether this is a sustainable investment of general fund dollars, but it also leads to questions about where are they going to cut? Are they going to cut from Medicaid? Are they going to cut revenue sharing to local communities that could impact public safety? Are they going to cut from education for our universities or community colleges? And they have refused to disclose where this $600 million is going to come from in the general fund.
Could that move forward? Could that be the plan that is taken most seriously in this whole thing?
Well, I don't think many people are taking it seriously. And as I said, I have grave concerns about their approach. The governor has grave concerns about that approach. It's the kind of accounting and kicking the can down the road approach that has led, for example, the U.S. Congress to run enormous budget deficits, and it's fiscally irresponsible.
Let me ask both. We're just about out of time here. But do we know when the House Business Office report, the full thing, is expected to drop? Jonathan,
well,
do you
all
know?
Week I was hearing by the end of this week. However, yesterday that changed to Friday or Monday. So there's a possibility now this could stretch out over the weekend.
Okay. We want to thank both of you. I wish we had more time. Leader of the House Democrats, Tim Geimel of Auburn Hills. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
Jonathan Osting of MLive. Best of luck. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.